Good morning, everyone. Today's daf in Nedarim is Nun Aleph. We're on Nun Amud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned L'Zech Nishmas Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. Yesterday, we really were treated to a Gemara Zagarata regarding Rabbi Akiva. A lot of overlap between the Gemara here in Nedarim and Daf Nun, and the Gemara in Ksuvas that we did together not so long ago in Samach Beis. And so you piece these Gemaras together, and you get a more detailed picture of the life of some of the life of Rabbi Akiva. We went through the six revenues that Rabbi Akiva had that took him from a position of having no money to having a lot of money. And I guess in the vein of discussing Tanaim that had a lot of money, so we move the topic of discussion to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. The Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is the Masadar Mishnayos. He's the one who arranged, edited the Mishnayos, and he is largely responsible, solely responsible, however you want to put it, for the compilation of Torah Shebaal Peh and putting it into some sort of written form. It was around the end of the second century, about 1800 years ago, and needless to say, he is one of the transformational figures in terms of the Masorah, in terms of the oral tradition. The Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi also was the Nasi. He was, that kind of goes with the name. He was a leader of the Jewish people. He was the head. And also he was unbelievably wealthy. Today we're going to get just a small glimpse in terms of his wealth and how much money he had. Elsewhere the Gemara says that anyone who makes an excuse why they can't learn, we all have excuses, every one of us. Anyone who wants to make an excuse that they can't learn because they have too much money, and it's hard to manage all that money and also stay with learning. So the Gemara says you have Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, who is going to be Mechayiv. He's going to obligate those people with money. Because, as we'll see in a moment, he had plenty of it, and nevertheless, he still his prime dedication in life was to learning Torah. So, okay, with that stated, we are in the Gemara. We're going to start with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is in Masros. The Mishnah goes as follows: Tanan Hasam Anun Amad Beis. It's about 2/3 of the way down. Hay Ose Bechlufsin Lo Yocha Bimno Sheva Bimno Sheva Lo Yocha Bechlufsin. The Mishnah there has a very basic halacha. Very simple halacha, and that is that when you're working in a field, so you can just snack on some of the food that you work in the field, right? We have an issur in the Torah when it comes to in terms of muzzling your animal. You're not allowed to muzzle your animal when they work in the when they're working with food, because it's very hard. In other words, you're working and there's food right in front of you, and so don't muzzle your animal when he's working with food. Let him take a little bit. And the same thing is true regarding human labor as well. In other words, if the person's working in the field, so he by right has a could take a little bit off the tree and eat a little bit. And by the way, Trumas HaMaisos is not an issue, because Trumas HaMaisos are only going to be chayiv once the food is processed. Right, they have to have the Gemar Malacha. So that's the basic halacha. And also the basic, including the basic halacha, is that you only can snack on the food that you're working with, and you can't go and you can't just simply help yourself to anything in the field. And that's what the Mishnah is teaching us. The Mishnah is teaching us is that if I'm working with a strain of fruit called klufsin, which we'll identify in just a moment, so then you can't eat the Beno Sheva. Beno Sheva is another fruit, very similar, but it's not the same. And that's the point the Mishnah is making, is that you can only eat on the field that you're working, and you can't eat from another fruit, even if the other fruit's very similar. Good. And the Gemara now, after quoting the Mishnah, why are we learning this Mishnah now? My klufsin, because the Gemara wants to now help us identify what exactly is meant by klufsin. So, mina de te'ena de abdemehun lifti. So, it's a type of fig, and it's used to make lifti. Lifti? A fig dish. Okay, I can't help you any more than that. So, there was a particular person who sent his servant to culinary school, and so that he would learn 1,000 different ways to prepare lifti. Okay, so it's a fig dish that can be processed and produced and cooked into many different ways. And this particular person wanted a slave to learn the culinary art in order to make 1,000 different presentations of lifti. Agme tamne me'e. So he went to school, and the school did a pretty good job. School taught him 800. So that's not bad. 800 out of 1,000, so that's 80%. It's pretty good. However, he paid so that his servant will earn 1,000. So he got shortchanged by 20%. And azamne ledina lekame derebi. So he took him to court. In other words, he took, the school, the teacher, the culinary teacher, he took him to court because, he paid for having his first slave to learn 1,000. Only got 800. So he took him to court in front of Rebbe. I'm a Rebbe. So Rebbe, before he gave an actual ruling, or maybe he didn't, I don't know. But before he did so, it's a Rebbe quipped. And what we get here in our Gemara is Rebbe's thoughts. Avaseinu Amru, Nashina Tova. So our forefather said, we have forgotten good. Meaning, you know, we used to have it good, but we've forgotten it. Anu afilu beinenu lareinu. We've never seen it this good. Meaning, can you imagine that this guy needs 1,000 different ways to have his fig dish prepared and sent his servant to school in order to prepare? And in other words, basically, Rebbe is saying it's kind of a ridiculous case. It's strange that I'm even hearing this case. Now we don't know any more about the incident, or how did Rebbe Paskin, did the school have liability? I guess it touches on issues of whether or not, if schools are expected to teach a certain amount and they don't teach a certain amount, is there any kind of liability? So, it's certainly interesting, but that's all we get and from that episode. Rebbe Avadlay.
What if the student can absorb
it? Right. You can always try to assign fault to the other party. It's, you know. I've been involved in one or two of those conversations. The guy, again, as you know, as opulent as the story is, the guy had a taina. He had a legitimate claim. He paid for 1,000. He's right. Okay. Anyway, let's move on. So Rebbe Avadlay Hilula, Rebbe Shimon Rebbe. So Rebbe made a chasna for his son and kasav al beis kanana. Now for the wedding hall and for basically everything, esrim va'arba ilfin ribuyin dinarin. So he spent 24,000 times 10,000 dinarim. Okay, so 24,000 times 10,000. What? Huh? 240? 240 million?
Yeah.
Okay. So 240 million dinarim he spent. Again, I don't know how much that translates into today's dollars and cents. That's a lot. Right, correct. That's correct. A ksuva, which is a good amount of money, which is going to inhibit a husband from divorcing his wife, is 200 zuz. Okay, so and now we're talking about spending 240 million zuz on the wedding. Okay, that's a lot. So nafka beis ganana dein. Okay, so that's how much he spent on this wedding. V'lo av zamne la bar kapara, and he did not invite bar kapara. Okay, bar kapara, who is a contemporary of Rebbe Yehuda Nasi, a colleague, a student, he wasn't invited. It sounds like from the Gemara. Now the Gemara, the story is going to be so interesting coming up. The story is going to take us from here until almost the Mishnah. The next Talmud. So we'll be in the story for a little bit. But still, as much as the Gemara is telling us, there's a lot of details in the story that just simply the Gemara does not share. And also, the Ran is not does not write extensively on these Gemaras. So really, I can only speculate. And I won't, because I don't know. But for whatever reason, Bar Kappara was not invited to the wedding. It could have to do with the fact that Bar Kappara was a joker, a bit of a prankster, tried to get everyone to laugh. He was a professional badchan. That means an entertainer, if you will. And that's not generally how we think about Bar Kappara. Meaning when he's quoting the Gemara, you know, he's a Tana. He's a all right. Anyway. So Bar Kappara was not invited. Amrlei im lo over ritzona kach lo se ritzona achas kama v'kama. For those people who are over ritzona, those who violate your will. So if this is what they get, lo osa ritzona achas kama v'kama. So how much more so for those who do fulfill your will? Now it's not exactly clear in the Gemara what Bar Kappara is saying. Meaning literally, I know what he's saying, but it sounds like, just from the context of the Gemara, that he's upset that he wasn't invited. He's comparing those who are violating the words of Hashem to those who are compliant with the words of Hashem. But how does that have anything to do with his not being invited to the wedding? I'm not clear, to be honest. But anyway, Azamne. But somehow he was able to communicate to Rebbe that he was upset that he didn't get invited to the wedding, and so therefore he got an invitation. But Rebbe says to Bar Kapara, Amar lo osir, I'm sorry. So before we get to that, Amar lo osir tzono b'olam hazeh, kach olam haba alachas kama v'kama. And once he got invited to the wedding, he says, okay, good. For the osir tzono, those who comply with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, so this is what they get in this world, meaning, look at the lavish I'm about to enjoy. So can you imagine what it's going to be like in the world to come? Okay, so Bar Kapara finally gets an invite. Yuma de mechaich be Rebbe Asya Paranasa La'ama. The day that Rebbe smiles, tragedy, calamity falls on the world. So, now, again, Gemara over here is a little sketchy. So, meaning sketching. Like, in other words, we're not even given full sentences over here. It's not clear, like, what the motivation is. But it seems like from the Gemara. I'm going to just, I'm going to take a little bit of a gamble in terms of what's going on right now. It seems like from the Gemara that Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, by design, did not want joy and happiness and laughter.
Frivolity.
Okay, right, frivolity. Right, that's a better way to say it. I do appreciate that. He didn't want that. In other words, he wanted in general to be more of a serious nature, more of a serious mood. Remember, Rebbe lived after Churban Beis HaMikdash, so about 100 years after the Churban. So, in general, he did not like any type of frivolity. Now, one can wonder, if that's true, why did he spend so much money on the wedding? Okay, I'm also wondering as well. But again, he's a Nasi, he's the head of the Jewish people. I guess, in other words, just think, as a simple example, think when the rabbi makes any type of simcha, he's going to invite everybody. So, Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi, he's the leader of the Jewish people. So, I guess just by occupation, the wedding's got to be a big wedding. Either way, so he did not want any frivolity. Amrle labar kapara. So he turns to Bar Kapara and he says, look, I know what's going to happen now. So you're going to be a joker. You're going to be a prankster and at the wedding, because that's generally what you do. Now, what it seems like is that Bar Kapara disagreed with Rebbe fundamentally over whether or not there should be extra joy and extra frivolity in people's lives. So they could really be having I'm going off on a limb saying all this. I don't know this to be so, but it could be that they're having some sort of very serious debate about how serious a person should be. Rebbe's on the side of the spectrum of being very serious, very somber, and Bar Kapara on the other hand, so just was more good-natured, a little more, believe that a person should be a little more lighthearted. Either way, that's what it sounds like. So Rebbe turns to Bar Kapara and he says, don't do it. I'm Leila Bar Kapara, lo tibatchin v'yavina lachar begir v'dechite. He says, look, if you don't be a joker, you don't be a prankster at the wedding, so I'll give you 40 sa'a of wheat. Okay, I'll give you a sum of money. Okay, it used to be that they would hire entertainers at the wedding. I mean, nowadays they do as well. I mean, they're called the musicians. But back in the good old days, in other words, you get a batchan. You get a person to basically make fun and make light at the chasnas. So basically, Rebbe says to Bar Kapara, look, I'll pay you if you don't be a joker at the wedding. Amar le lichze mar, dechol giver debeina shakina. So Bar Kapara says to Rebbe, okay, so fine. All the girvaya, all the amounts of wheat that you're going to give me, so I'll take. Shakatikula Rabba, so what Bar Kapara then did is he takes this huge basket, and Chafya Kufra, we're on the top of Nun Alpha Mibbeis, second line down, Chafra Kufya, and then he puts some sort of pitch on the basket, so there's no holes in the basket, so any wheat that goes into the basket doesn't go through. Okay, so in other words, sounds like from the story now, he's getting the basket ready to collect his pay. And then he takes the basket, he puts it on his head. And he says, okay, now take the wheat and put it on the basket on top of my head. Now, I don't know if I'm properly communicating how funny, silly Bar Kapara is being in front of Rebbe, but basically, he's walking around the chasna with a basket on his head. If you want, maybe you could turn the basket upside down, make it even a little funnier looking. eating. Either way, Bar Kapara is doing exactly what Rebbe didn't want him to do, and that is he was making a bit of a fool of himself. So. So Rebbe smiled. In other words, it was just silly. Bar Kapara was being silly, and Bar Kapara wanted to get Rebbe to smile, and mission accomplished. But again, remember, mission accomplished, but that's not what Rebbe wanted. Rebbe didn't want to smile. So Rebbe says to Bar Kapara, I warned you. Don't do that. Don't try to make me laugh. So Amrlei Rechita Dereshna Kanasivna. He says to him, the wheat on your head I'm going to take. So okay, again, not perfectly clear what some of these exchanges mean. Amale Bar Kapar Lebarte de Rebbe. So Bar Kapar now turns to the daughter of Rebbe, and he says to him, "Lamacha shetzinu chamra, brikuda davuch. Tomorrow, I'm gonna drink wine while your father is dancing, uvikirkana diimech, and while your mother's singing." Okay, so again, not perfectly clear. I know what the words mean. I don't know what Bar Kapar is trying to communicate to the daughter of Rebbe in that particular citation. Ben Elasha Chasid de Rebbe Hava. So this person by the name of Ben Elasha, who was the son-in-law of Rebbe, so Asher Gadol Hava. So he was wealthy, extraordinarily wealthy. Azamne lebe hilula de Rebbe Shimon b'Rebbe. Now he got invited to the wedding. So Amle Bar Kapar le Rebbe, my toeva. And so now the Gemara is going to give us a little bit of discussion, dialogue that takes place at the wedding. So what are they going to talk about? They're going to talk in Torah. I mean, obviously, what else are they going to talk about? So Bar Kapar turns to Rebbe. Bar Kapar says to Rebbe, what do you think is meant by the word Toeva? Where does the word Toeva come up in the Torah? So you see on the side, Vayikra Perichaf, we're in Parshas Kedoshim. So we're talking about Mishkav Zachar. The Torah says Mishkav Zachar. So homosexuality, the Torah describes it as being Toeva. And so what is the actual meaning of the word, the etymology of the word Toeva? This is Bar Kapara's question to Rebbe. So called Amalei Rebbe Dahachin Hu Toeva. So Rebbe makes a couple suggestions. Whatever Rebbe suggests as the proper explanation of the word Toeva, Parcha Bar Kapara, he challenges it, and he basically refutes any suggestion that Rebbe makes. Amar Lei Parshe At. So Rebbe says to Bar Kapara, okay, you explain to me. So you tell me what the word Toeva means. Amar Lei Tesi Debiaschu Tarmali. I'm sorry. So, Tasi Debitzchau, invite your wife. Tamerli Natla, and get me a cup. Right? The word Natla means a cup. Right? The bracha that we make when we wash our hands in the morning is Al Natilas Yadayim. So, Natilas Yadayim, right, usually is translated as the taking of the water. But the truth of the matter is that Natila in the bracha means Natla, means a cup. Because, you know, when you wash your hands in the morning, you have to wash from a cup. So he says, go bring your wife and pour me a cup. So Asas Ramalei, so along comes the wife and pours him a cup. So Amalei, Larebi, Kum Rikodli. And then Bar Kapara says to Rebbe, okay, I want you to dance for me. So basically, again, in the context of the story, so Bar Kapara says, I'll teach you Torah, but, you know, in other words, you're going to have to behave a little bit silly in order for me to teach you Torah. And again, what could be going on over here, again, I'm speculating, again, what could be going on over here is that this is Bar Kapara's general philosophical approach to life, meaning learn Torah, but be a little bit lighthearted about it. They don't have to be so somber, so serious, and you could be a little bit lighthearted. So basically, he's saying, okay, Rebbe, have your wife pour me some wine, and you, Rebbe, you go and dance in front of me, and by the way, Rebbe does it all, meaning Rebbe's interested in learning Torah, and okay, he's going to look a little silly, and okay, but he's interested. He's more than interested. So Amalei LaRebbe Kum Rikodli De Emalach Hachi. I'm sorry. De Emalach Hachi. So before I tell you, I want you to dance for me. Amar Rachmana Toeva Toa Ata Ba. The word Toeva says Bar Kapara. This is his explanation of the word Toeva. Toa Ata Ba. You are misled. In other words, instead of a man having relations with a woman, a man has relations with a man, so Toa. In other words, he's mistaken. He's going in an incorrect path. Next cup of wine at the chasna. So now they go over the word tevel. Where does the Torah use the word tevel? So again, same general location. It's in the Parsha Arayis in the Torah. So tevel is used in terms of Mishkav Behema. Now the topic of discussion is bestiality. Okay, the funny discussions to be had at a wedding, but they're not really funny discussions. In other words, it's exactly the point. In other words, there is bia which the Torah permits, and then there's bia, of course, which the Torah doesn't permit. And the Torah uses these strange words in the context of these prohibited arayas. So that's what Bar Kappar is explaining to Rebbe, the etymology of some of these words that the Torah uses. So we describe the term toeva, and now they're going to use the term tevel. So Amar Le Kinyana Kadma. So the Gemara says now. We basically went through, in this case, literally the same song and dance. In other words, Bar Kappara asks Rebbe, do you know what the word tevel means? And Rebbe says, I think I do. And Rebbe gave a couple of suggestions. And Bar Kappara says, no, 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 no. And then Bar Kappara says, okay, have your wife pour me a drink. And then Bar Kappara says, okay, now Rebbe, you dance. And again, we literally go through the same song and dance. And Amalei, Avid Li, the Omer Lach, you do for me whatever I tell you. Avad, so again, Rebbe did it. Everything that Bar Kappara wanted him to do. Amar Lei, Tevel Hu, Tavlin Yesh Ba. Maishanya Hadabi, Amin Kulo Bias. Is there any, literally, spice in this particular bia? Meaning, there's no gain in Mishkav Behema. Right? The Ran says that when you read the Gemara over here, you're supposed to read it like incredulously. Meaning, is there any spice to this type of bia? In other words, it's a bia that doesn't have, that doesn't provide the kind of benefit that would make a person want to do it. And so, why would a person do it? Okay, other than just to satisfy his most basic urges. But there's no point in even doing so, aside from the fact that the Torah itself prohibits it. Okay, that's the word tevel. The word tevel means spice, but you got to read it in the context of, why would a person want to do that? So Amale Umay Zima. Okay, so now we're up to the third term in the Torah describes. Woman goes astray. So what the Torah describes the term Zima. Amrlei, Evi Kinyana Kadma. Avon. So once again, same song and dance. The pouring of a cup of wine for Bar Kappara, Rebbe having to dance. Amrlei, Zumahi. So and then what Bar Kappara explains is that the word Zima is a contraction of three words, Zu Mahi. And the Ran explains that this is a reference to the child, meaning that when she goes astray and has an extramarital affair, and then she has a child, simply do not know who the paternity of the child is. And the word Zima is a contraction of Zu, this one, meaning the resulting child, Mahi, we don't know who the father is. Okay, so It's a funny way to learn Torah, right? And I mean that literally. That's what Bar Kappara wanted. So he wanted Rebbe to, dance and literally danced in order to get to learn the Torah. By the way, just one observation. It's funny. Here literally, but it's funny that Rebbe Yehuda Anasi on three occasions, and these three occasions, didn't know the etymology of the words. Like, one of the things that Rebbe was most proficient in is the etymology of words. I say that because we know, right, the Gemara a couple of times. Right, the Amta de Rebbe, the maidservant of Rebbe, like, she was, she lived with Rebbe, she listened to Rebbe say Torah all the time. Like, in other words, she knew the etymology of every word, right? Remember, the Gemara tells us that the Chachamim didn't know what words meant, what certain words meant, and she said, oh, that word, it means this, and this word means that, and she knew the meanings of all words, meaning, so hopefully it's fair for me to speculate that Rebbe really was an expert on word etymology, and it's kind of interesting that over here, right, Toeva, Zima, Tevel, these are words that, right, basic words in the Torah that Rebbe didn't understand their etymology. He knew what they meant, but he didn't know their etymology. It's an observation. I don't know what to do with it, but it's just a simple observation. Anyway, Lo Yocha ben Elisha lemizbal, ben Elisha couldn't handle this anymore. Meaning, he could not imagine that this is Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and this is Bar Kapara is putting him through this. It was too much. Ben Elisha couldn't handle it. So, Kamenofik, so the son-in-law of Rabbi got up and he left the Chasna. Kamhu v'insisei mitaman. So he, together with his wife, left the premises. So my ben Elisha d'tanya. And the Gemara says a little bit of background regarding this Ben Elisha. So we learned in a brayso, lo lechina pizer Ben Elisha es ma'asav, ela laharos bahen tasprosho kohen gadol. Now, he paid a lot of money for his haircut. I remember there was I forgot which president it was, and it's not even that important. But a certain president spent a fortune of money for a haircut. It was what? It was two. Right. Okay. Right. Whatever. So I spent a lot of money for a haircut, and so the Gemara says that Ben Elisha. So it's not like new information that. You know, can you imagine how much he spent on a haircut? So this Ben Elisha also spent a lot of money on the haircut, but the Gemara says lo lechinam. But it wasn't for no. It wasn't for not. Pizer Ben Elisha es ma'asav that he just kind of squandered his money away. Ela laharos kohen taspar. I'm sorry. Laharos bahen taspar shel kohen gadol. What he wanted to do was he wanted to show this is how a Kohen Gadol gets a haircut. Dechsiv kesom yichmasenu esro shehem. He quotes from the Pesukim in Yecheskel, and by the way, Yecheskel himself was a Kohen. So, in other words, the Kohanim underwent a particular type of haircut, and this Ben Elisha himself was a descendant of Kohanim. So anyway, so the Tana Ka'en Lulanis, so the Gemara says that you want to have an idea of what the haircut looked like, so the Gemara says it's Lulanis. So again, that only begs the question, it'd help us if we knew what that meant. So my Lulanis, I'm Rav Yehuda, Tisparti Chida. It's a very distinctive haircut, special. Hey Chida, the Gemara says, can you just give just one way to try to describe it? I'm a Rava, Rosh Hashazeb, and Sadi Kar Shazeb. It's the kind of haircut where it's so short, but specifically short, where the end of one hair reaches the root of the hair next to it. V'ainu tasparsha kohen gadol, and that is the tasparsha of the kohen gadol. Okay, so again, a picture here is worth more than 1,000 words. I'm sure if we saw what it looked like, it would really help us. The Gemara doesn't give much to work with in terms of what it looked like. I could just simply say it's a short haircut, but there must be something very special and unusual about it that made it so distinctive. Either way, that's how Ben Elisha spent some of his money to get such a haircut, to show people what the haircut of the Kohen Gadol used to look like. Okay, moving along. Kohen Gadol will get a haircut. Remember this? I forgot where the Gemara was, but I do remember. How frequently would a Kohen Gadol get a haircut? So once a week. King would get a haircut every day. Kohen Gadol will get a haircut once a week. Why once a week? So I'm just going on memory now. So the Kohen Gadol will get a haircut once a week because remember, what happens is that there is a shift change every week in the Beis HaMikdash. There are 24 mishmaros, and once a week one of the mishmaros would work. So that means each mishmar would work approximately 2 weeks out of the year. But every week every Shabbos, there would be a new mishmar coming in. So the Kohen Gadol, when he would be meeting the new mishmar, so he would have a fresh haircut in order to meet the new mishmar that was coming in. Okay, anyway, I've exhausted my knowledge about Kohen Gadol and haircuts. Let's go on. Uvid Delas Haramutsa. We go back to our Mishnah. The Mishnah was already some days ago. The Mishnah was back on Memtes. The Mishnah talked about various Nedarim. If you make a Neder from Tavshil, so the Mishnah taught us that Tavshil is a reference to anything which has a loose thickness to it. It is not it's not a hard food, but it's a soft food, like runny eggs we described. So that would be the category of tafshal, anything that you dip your bread into. So the Gemara says, so just a couple of examples that are not included in this neder would be the beitza tarmuta. Remember, that was the hard-boiled egg, but not just a hard-boiled egg. Very specific type of hard-boiled egg, which we described yesterday. And dalas haramutsa, and also this kind of pumpkin, this gourd. So the Gemara over here goes on to explain. My dalas haramutsa, amashmo kra karkuzai. So kra is a gourd, is a pumpkin. Karkuzai from a particular place. Rav Ashi Amar Delasa Tmuna Beremetz. Rav Ashi says that it's a gourd that is basically sitting in coal. Eitzvah Ravina L'Rav Ashi, Rav Nechemi Amar Delas, Aram Eishi Delas Hamitris. That the delas, the Aramaic delas, is the Egyptian delas. Klaim im hayavanis, and it would be considered klaim if it got mixed up with Greek gourd. So we know the halacha is that I can't take different fruits and different vegetables and plant them together and cross them together. That's a iser of klaim. So over here we're just learning that certain types of gourd are considered klaim with other types of gourd because it's not part of the same family. And im hayavanis klaim im haremutsasa haremutsa. And then the Gemara points out that it's also going to be klaim if it's together with remutsa. So what do you see? You see that the remutsa is not going to be the word remutsa is not the way that the gourd is prepared, but actually it's a reference to a particular place. And so it's a type of species of gourd. So to Yifta, the Gemara says, okay. So Rav Ashi's suggestion that the Dlas HaRemutza is the way it's prepared, it doesn't seem to be an acceptable shot of what it means. Okay. Next. Hanoder Mimaisa Kedera. Now again, if you take a look back at the Mishnah Mem Tesamun Aleph, so our Mishnah seems very similar to the Mishnah on Mem Tesamun Aleph. In fact, it's more than just similar. It's the same. Meaning, if you look back at Mem Tesamun Aleph, remember there were four different types of Nedarim that were mentioned in the Mishnah. One, Anodim and a Mavushal, making a Neder from that which is Mavushal. So that means cooked in a liquid. Two was Tafshil, any runny food. Three was Maisa Kedera. So that's something that was very cooked. I'll explain what that means in just a moment. And four, Hayore Lekedera, anything that goes into the pot. So now when you look at our Mishnah, we're Nun Alpha Manalf towards the bottom. You look at our Mishnah, it's verbatim the third and fourth case of our Mishnah. So probably what happened is that this isn't, in other words, even though we have the word Mishnah over here, it doesn't really mean that this is a new Mishnah. It's just simply a citation of the previous Mishnah. It's kind of like the two dots should belong over here instead of the word Mishnah. Okay, and if you look at the bottom, by the way, there's a note that basically makes this point. So again, I'll just read it. It's not a new Mishnah. It's the citation of the previous Mishnah. I know to be Maisa Kedera and also Lama Maisa Raschasa. And Amar Kone Mayor Le Kedera Shani Tom Maisa Bechol Hanasa Be Kedera. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to elaborate. Tanya, we learned in a Braisa. I know to be Yored Le Kedera also be Yored La Alphas. The Shekvar Yared Le Kedera. Okay, the Kedera is a pot. Alphas is basically like a frying pan. And before they would put something in a frying pan, so the way it used to go back then is that first they would cook it a little bit and soften it up, and then they would put it in the frying pan. So if you made a neder that you're not going to have anything that went into a pot, so you can't have something even that goes into a frying pan, because anything that went into a frying pan by definition went into a pot. Yar lekedera comes yar laafas. Mina yar laafas. However, let's say your neder is, I'm not going to have fried foods. Okay, this neder I can totally relate to. Okay, the person, you know, doesn't, trying to cut down, trying to maybe even lose some weight, and he doesn't want to eat anything which is fried. So fine. So yar no alfas, mutter be yar lekedera. So therefore, if it's something which is cooked in a pot, that's fine. That's not fried. And even though anything that went into the alfas first went into the kedera, but the opposite's not true. Something that went into a kedera does not necessarily go into an alfas. Good. Min hanase be kedera, anything that was prepared in a kedera, mutter be nase be alfas. One would be allowed to have something that was fried. Because nasa b'kedera, the Ron goes on to explain, means that it was finished in the kedera. Well, if it was finished in the frying pan, so then that doesn't fall under your neder. Min nasa b'alfas mutter b'nasa b'kedera. If, let's say, you make a neder against anything that was finished in the frying pan, so that would only include things that were finished in the frying pan. Something that was cooked would be fine. Hanodem neyor latanor. Ein aser ella bepas. If you make a neder against anything that goes in the oven, not anything. min hayore latana, that which generally goes in the oven. So that's what generally goes in the oven is bread. So you really, your neder is against bread. The imam komas etanur, however, if you say anything that goes into an oven, alai aser b'chol anasim etanur, so that's going to include anything that went into an oven. Your neder will be anything oven baked will be prohibited. Okay. We're starting now the Mishnah on the very top of the Amud Mina Kavush. Again, the continuing the same theme. The neder here is made against a certain type of food prepared a certain way. So you say min hakavush. Now, the Ran over here in the Mishnah offers two explanations. I'm going to just stick with the first explanation of the Ran, and that is, the key word over here is hakavush the hay. The hay in Hebrew is what's called a hay ayidia. It's a very specific type of food. The word kavush means pickled, so ha kavush means, you know, I'm not going to eat the pickled food. So vayinasu ela min hakavush shel yerek. So this is going to only reference vegetables that are pickled, meaning what is the food that generally is pickled? The answer is vegetables. You could pickle other foods, certain meats are pickled, I guess fruits are pickled, I don't know enough about the pickling industry. But in other words, but generally speaking, it's vegetables which are pickled. So if you say the word hakavush, you're referencing vegetables. Kavush sha'ani to'aim. However, if you say the word kavush and you leave out the hay, so now you're just simply saying, I'm not eating pickled foods. Not the pickled foods, but rather just pickled foods. So also, b'chol hakvushim. So then that's going to include anything which is pickled. Good. And the Ran says it's going to be the same shot for the next case as well. Min hashaluk. What if I make an eder of the overcooked food? Eino aser ela min hashaluk shel basar. That's generally a reference to meat. Some people like their meat really... I was going to say well done, but we're not talking about grilling. We're talking about like in some sort of sauce. But some people like it really like cooked soft. So that's generally speaking a reference to meat. Shaluk shani toim. However, he doesn't say the word hashaluk. He just simply says shaluk. Asa b'chol hashalukim. So anything which is overcooked, any food which is overcooked is going to be included in the neder. Okay, Gemara. Amle revach abreder avila revashi amar. Dikavish mai, dishalik mai, ditzli mai, dimalich mai, hechan mashma. The Ran explains that over here you didn't say you didn't start the word with the letter hey, which is a definitive article. You didn't say it without the hey, which would be an all-encompassing language, but you used the dalid. So is that dalid inexpansive, or is that dalid limiting like the hey? The Gemara says, Tibaye. Gemara says, that's a good question, and I don't know the answer, says the Gemara, Teku. Okay, next Mishnah. Min atzli in aser ela min hatzli shel basar divra bihuda. If you say min atzli, I'm not going to eat roasted food. So that is a reference to meat. So tzli sh'ani to'aim. However, if you say tzli, again, the generic roasted, so aser b'chol atzluyim. So that is now going to include anything which is roasted. Min hamaliach. So if the person says, I'm not going to have anything which was salted, ein aser ela min hamaliach shel dag. So generally speaking, what's salted, meaning prepared just through salting? Fish. Maliach sha'ani to'aim. However, if he just simply says the words maliach without the hay, without the definitive article, so aser b'chol hameluchim. So that would come and prohibit all salted foods. Dag dagim shani toem. So if he says the words dag dagim, what is meant by the double language? So aser b'hen bein megadol bein bektanim bein meluchim bein tefelim bein chayim bein mevushalim. So it comes to prohibit all types of fish, big, small, salted, not salted, raw or cooked. Right? In other words, if he says the words dag dagim, because the word dag dagim is basically a language that would indicate that I'm just done with fish, all types of fish. However, umuter b'tiryas terufa uvitzir. However, even though he can eat fish, but that is basically whole pieces of fish. But if it is tiryas terufa, or it's seer, or it's morias. So, what is that? Basically, gefilte fish. Basically. All right, if you take a look at the Ran, I know the Ran's not going to use the word gefilte fish. I don't even think the Ran, right, Ran was a, right, Ran was of Spanish descent. I'm not sure he even was following what gefilte fish is. But anyway, but if you take a look at the Ran, his explanation, it's in the Mishnah, halfway down on the Amud, Tiras Trufa Dag Gadol Taruf Dak Dak. It was cut up into fine pieces. And Mishum Hachi Sharei Mishum Dig Dag Dagim Shleimim Mashma. Because the nether was only against fish. And the word fish, as it's generally understood, means the whole fish. But if it's something which is ground up and you make a mishmash out of it, or as what we Ashkenazim like to call gefilte fish, so that's not part of the neder. Gefilte fish is not fish. I mean, again, you can go with it whatever. Huh? Yeah. So mashma velo shufim v'choshekin shemot b'tzir shel dagim. And also, in other words, if ground up fish is fine, meaning that's not under the nether, so tzir as well. Tzir is the brine, the juice that comes out of the fish. Shu shomena yotze mehem ukir v'davgam meravim ba. And also, just as a bonus, you get also some of the intestines of the fish together with the brine. Now, to me, not appealing, but that doesn't matter. The point the Mishnah is making is that it's no good. V'choshken shemotu b'morya shuhu shmeino shel dag bilvad. And the morya, for sure, that's fine. That's just simply the fat of the fish that comes off of it. Okay, back to the Mishnah. Anoder min hatzachana. A person makes a neder against tzachana. Tzachana aser b'tiras trufa. So. The tzachana is basically, again, kind of like a dish prepared from chopped up fish. So, aser b'tiras trufa, mutar b'tzir v'muryas. So here you can't eat the trufa, you can't eat the chopped up fish because falls under the description of tzachana. However, the innards, the oil that comes out of the fish, that would be fine. I know the material is trufa, aser b'tzir v'muryas. And finally, if he made a neder against tiryas trufa, so that neder is an all-inclusive neder, which would include even the brine and the innards of the fish, and the oil of the fish. Tanya the Gemara, let's just quickly run through the next bit of Gemara. Tanya with Antana Bryce, Rabbi Shimon ben Lazar, Omer, Dag, Shani Toim, Arsa Begadolim, Amut Begtanim. If you say Dag, Dag is a reference to large fish. Daga, Shani Toim, if you say the word Daga, Arsa Begtanim, so that is going to prohibit him from having small fish. Umut Begadolim, but he could have big fish. Dag Daga, Shani Toim, however, if he uses the double language of Dag Daga, Arsa Begadolim, so that prohibits large and small fish. So how do you get this? How do you get dog meaning a large fish and the word daga means small fish? So again, those of you who speak other languages other than English, so you know that most of the time, so there is I know this in Spanish, so there's a diminutive form of the word. In other words, there's a word and then you can say it in a diminutive form. Although, in Hebrew, we don't have it so much. In other words, dag and daga is basically masculine feminine. So, I'm not really sure. But anyway, where do we see that the word dag is a reference to a large fish? Okay, so, Sefer Yonah. So we have the word dag as a fish that swallowed Yonah. Obviously, it's a big fish. Mimei Hadaga. Yeah, but in the same time, however, you look in the same Sefer Yonah, and you'll see that Yonah is davening from Mei Hadaga. What happened? The fish went from Dag to Daga. So Halokashi Delmapate Dagado Bali Dagatan. So the Gemara says, well, maybe a big fish swallowed Yonah, spat him out, and inserted him into a small fish. But the Gemara is speculating. Ella vehadaga sher biyor mesa. So the Gemara says, okay, the fish swimming in the Nile, they died as a result of the makas dam. So Ketani Mesu Gedolim Mesu. So the Gemara says, okay, but that also is not unbelievable evidence. What do you mean to tell me? Only the small fish died, but the large fish did not die? Ela Daga Mashma Gedolim Mashma Ketanim. So the Gemara says, okay, we'll concede. From the Psukim and Tanakh, we really don't know. And the word daga can mean big and small. However, Vinadarm, Halacha, Chalosh, Menei Adam. But You know how it works. We're talking about Nedarim right now. When it comes to Nedarim, Tanakh is not the source of the definition, but rather Lashon Bnei Adam. Again, it's based on common usage of the language. Finishing up, Hanoder Minat Sachana, Amalei Ravin L'Ravashi, Amar Harei Alai Tzichin, Mai. The Gemara says, what if he says the word Tzichin? Is that also going to prohibit the brine and the innards of the fish? Tibai, the Gemara says that I do not know. Unclear what whether that includes that as well. Atkan, that takes us to the end of the daf. Quickly to wrap up, we went over the opulence of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, his wealth, his great wealth. We talked today about the wedding that he made. He did not invite Bar Kapara. Could be, again, I don't know this definitively, but it could be that we're looking at a fundamental disagreement between Rebbe and Bar Kapara in terms of the general mood that a person should have. Should a person be somber? Should a person be happy? So it could be that that's really at root at what seems to be a very strange story between Rebbe and Bar Kapara. Then we went through a number of Mishnayos today giving the definition of certain Nedarim that are made. Maisa Kedera, Kohayorid Lekedera, and various different ways that foods are prepared, and what exactly the Neder is going to include when he makes such a Neder.